Okay, welcome to Truth Quest, and this is with Melody, and this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and I have my guest here, Clint Richardson. Clint?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, and I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And I've got Clint Richardson back, and he is been out there trying to, he's out there stirring some things up, but they're things that need to be stirred up, I think. Now I'm going to let you describe yourself just a little bit, so go ahead, Clint.
Boy, that's a tough one. I was a Hollywood guy. I was putting sounds to movies. Kind of had a crisis of conscience out there. Decided I couldn't be part of the propaganda machine any longer, especially when I heard people going to work in military bases and grabbing those controls like a video game booth and flying the drones and killing people in other countries. Women, children, didn't matter. And so I kind of got out of that business, and the first person I contacted, because I had this particular professional set of skills, was a gentleman named Walter Burian, who was he's pretty much the king of trying to expose the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reporting System of government, which is the basic accounting structure, the audit of government. It is a public document that is not necessarily shared in the public. And so since I met Walter and really got a grasp on what that is and how it is the biggest secret in government, I have been pretty much sacrificed everything in life to try to expose the government wealth and investments that are going on right under everybody's noses, and having some meager successes here and there.
Okay, now are you still trying to run for president?
I'm running, under the ironic reality that I can't win, because the government has controlling stock investment in a company called Diebold, meaning that it is the main shareholder of that company, and therefore it regulates everything that happens within that company because it votes for the board of directors. So I'm at a position where I want to teach people the reasons I can't win while still running for president, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it gives you a forum that isn't necessarily available otherwise, right?
Well, yeah, and truly, the reason I'm not running for a local office, and I have people asking me telling me I should run for sheriff, actually, because it'd be a great platform to tackle what I'm currently tackling. But the reason I'm doing president is because the president, in any corporate structure, is the head of that corporation, and our government is a corporation, and so each department that's within the federal apparatus, of which the president is the president of that apparatus, like Homeland Security and domestic security, your FEMA, all the things that we're worried about, the IRS, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, those are all they're called executive departments, and essentially an executive department is a presidentially appointed office. And so when you elect a president, you're essentially electing one man, not two men, because the vice president is whoever the president chooses. So you're electing one man, and then that man appoints every single person in government, and they appoint people under them. So you're giving permission to that man, that one single man, to pretty much name who your government's going to be. And then, of course, that man doesn't really do anything with his power. He does what he's told. But imagine if you got someone in there that actually said, okay, we're getting rid of the Department of Education, we're getting rid of the Homeland Security, we're getting rid of all these departments that we don't need, we're going to save taxpayers billions of dollars because these departments aren't needed, and kind of clean up the government and take the federal government outside of the states and let the states do their own thing. It's really simple. And really what it boils down to is I'm not running for president as much as I'm trying to draw attention to other people who not only have run for president, but who are the leaders of these groups. So I'm naming my cabinet. This is kind of a unique thing. I'm naming my cabinet members before I even announce my run. So, I'm naming Cynthia McKinney as my Secretary of State. I'm naming you know, Ron Paul even, who I have some issues with, but I want those Ron Paul supporters, whether they be Democrat, or excuse me, Republican or Libertarian, I want those people to be represented because they're good people, and, you know, Ron Paul would make a perfect Health and Human Services director because...
But he's been on the Finance Committee, hasn't he?
Well, you know, that's my one of my problems with Ron Paul is that he does not disclose the CAFR. He's been asked several times by Walter Burian to, you know, come out and say, look, here's the financial structure of government. You want an audit of the Federal Reserve. All you have to do is pull up that comprehensive annual financial report. It's 536 pages long, and you can find out anything you want to find out about the Federal Reserve. It is the audit of the Federal Reserve, and you can pull that up right on your home computer. But Ron Paul, you see, because it's the biggest, best-kept secret in government, if Ron Paul were to come out and talk about that, he would be ostracized. He would be killed. He'd be found with a hooker like Elliot Spitzer. He'd be, you know, something would happen to him that would destroy him. He's got a family. He's got a political career to think about. And nobody talks about this. Nobody.
Well, I was just watching the movie Inside Job, the documentary, and they had Dominic Strauss-Kahn in that, and he was kind of trying to expose what was going on with the our economic system. So I'm going, I wonder which if there's a tie into how his incident got exposed or not. So
yeah, well, and that's and it's a very true statement. You know, I had I do a local radio show here as well. And I highly recommend you look up a guy named Dick LaRosa. He used to be a state senator for New Jersey. And he is actually trying to expose this stuff. And very interesting gentleman and very interested in cleaning up government. So I recommend that people get him on the show because here's a state senator actually coming out and saying, yes, everything Walter's saying is true. Here's the reports. Look at them yourself. You know, the thing about... It's funny that you said Inside Job. That's kind of a synchronistic thing because part of my, you know, I'm coming out with a new documentary here as soon as I can get it out.
But and your current one is Corporation Nation, right?
Yes, the Corporation Nation, and it's thecorporationnation.com. It is a free movie because, like I said, this became so important to get this information out that it's pretty much become a self-sacrifice. You know, I'm a poor man at this point, but I'm... like to think I'm doing some, you know, some good work. But I decided, you know, after I saw this movie, Inside Job, you know, it was one of the best made movies I think I've ever seen in explaining what happened during that so-called financial crisis of 2007, 2008, a little bit into 2009, right? We know that General Motors got just kind of usurped into government. We know that the banks collapsed, that AIG got taken over by government. We know all this, right? And that Inside Job movie actually names the inside players. But what it doesn't do is it, amazingly, the biggest part of the puzzle is completely absent from the movie, and that is... that is the government ownership of these banks. And so what I did was I pulled up two different CAFRs, one from California, which was CalPERS, the California pension system out there, and then I pulled up the New York State Common Retirement Fund, and I went back to 2006. All right. So if you go and you watch this Inside Job movie, and you realize the information that I'm about to tell you, that Inside Job movie will make so much more sense to you because you know, most of the time we're asking, what the heck? Why are these guys letting this happen? Why is it seems like they're operating outside of the law when in fact they're just operating within government. So I pulled up the main players in the financial crash of 2007 and 2008. And just in the New York pension fund, one pension fund in New York, not the county and not the state, or excuse me, not the city, but the state of New York, had in 2006, I laugh at this, 530,000 shares at a market value of $73 million in Bear Stearns, the evil bank that we all blame for this, right? And then I keep going down. I see Countrywide Financial, another one that failed and got bailouts. 3.7 million shares at $138 million. Okay, I keep going down. I see Freddie Mac. Well, wait a minute. Freddie Mac, that was a public company. 2.9 million shares at a market value of $178 million. Now, this is just one pension fund.
So you're trying to tell us that they're paying, that was in their best interest to go ahead and save them because they were invested in them. Is that what
you're saying? I'm telling you that everything that happens in the stock market is a controlled, planned event because they own the stock market. And just to give you an example of what I mean, here's Merrill Lynch at $340 million. I'll just go down the list. Lehman Brothers, 1 million shares at $153 million. Fannie Mae, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Merrill Lynch got sucked into Bank of America. Here's Goldman Sachs at $1.7 million and $268 million market value. Bank of America that took Merrill Lynch at $19.6 million. Shares at a market value of 896. But see, then we get into the real players and how this happened, because we have to consider, well, okay, what about the rating companies, okay? Because you saw in that movie that the rating companies rated these stocks as AAA when they were actually they were actually failing. So here's Barclays PLC at 2.5 million shares and a market value of $29 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Moody's Corporation, the other ratings corporation that put up these stock values on these stocks at 1 million shares and 71.5 million as a U.S. market value for their stock investment. AIG, the insurance company, now if this company would have failed, the whole thing would have gone kaput, but you realize that government owned it already through stock investment. Here's 10.9 million shares at $726 million. In market value. So you kind of grasp that, you know, Morgan Stanley, I'll just go down the list without reading the values. Citigroup had over $1 billion in stocks. Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase. Here's one, Dow Jones and Company, 201 million shares at a market value of 7.8. So the Dow Jones Industrial, the magazine and everything that comes out about, you know, the Fortune 500, is owned by government. They are the majority shareholders of everything you can possibly think of.
So it really gets convoluted in the whole process of how this kind of shifts back and forth, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, and see, what happens is that we've been trained from birth, you know, from watching the news and from watching movies like the one that you just watched, to blame these banks. These banks are the bad guys, you know, the ratings companies, all these inside players. But again, they never show you who owned the companies in the first place. And so, you know, we blame Monsanto, for instance, for all this genetically modified horrors that are going on, and not even realizing that, guess who owns Monsanto? You know, why do you think that a person who works in Monsanto could possibly quit, you know, write a bill, quit Monsanto, get hired as the FDA chair, pass their own bill, and then get rehired at Monsanto after passing a bill that will help Monsanto Corporation? That couldn't happen in any normal government, but when the government owns the company that it regulates, the industry that company operates in, well, yeah, that can happen.
So there's a huge conflict of interest here.
Oh, you can't even imagine. I mean, when you pull up these reports, and again, that's what this documentary is going to show. I pull up all the state CAFRs, but the state pension fund CAFRs, actually. I mean, you'll see, here's Monsanto Company, 988,000 shares, at $83 million. Here's Morgan Stanley, 5 million shares. Here's Motorola Incorporated, 11 million shares. You know, I can go on. There's not a company that you will be able to find, or not find, excuse me, on this report. Murphy Oil, Myers, you know, it just goes on and on. And then you'll also find in the international holdings, they own China. There's $14 trillion invested in China. So the thought that China holds $1.5 trillion in American debt is almost laughable, because all America has to do is pull out $3 trillion and China is sunk. The whole thing is rigged.
It's a very game. Incestuous thing.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, it's... that's why I say, if you rewatch this brilliant movie called Inside Job with Matt Damon, you know, doing the
narration.
Hosting,
yeah.
And you realize this information, you realize that the government is the major shareholder and therefore it votes through proxy as the major shareholder. Collectively, all the 230,000 governments in the United States, you know, they collectively vote on what they hire the board of directors. They vote on mergers and acquisitions. It says so right in their reports. So once you realize that and you watch Inside Job again, you say, oh, well, this was really an inside job. And government is the inside player. I mean,
okay, now. Now, the reason that one of the reasons that you're here tonight is to take that in another direction, as to, you know, because what you're talking about, in a sense, some of this was the consolidation of these companies, governments, or what, and something is going on with the sheriffs and the like. Is that right?
Well, yeah, and you know, for the first time in my little short, if you want to call it a career, I don't know, I haven't made any money for anything I'm doing, but in the short term, the time that I've been exposing this stuff, and I came across this whole sheriff thing, I am now truly afraid for my well-being, because I'm now tackling the entire police structure of the county and for that matter the state of Utah, and it turns out that this is happening all over the country and has been happening for many years.
But before, whoops, let me say one thing though. But how we got through this, wasn't that you were interviewing your mayor, right?
Well, I learned about this some time ago. In fact, I can't even remember what really got me started on it. And then I just started looking into it. And, you know, I actually had to spend hours and hours on the phone because basically what's happening is a private corporation, a non-government corporation, in other words, a corporation like Target, who specializes in what's called special financing districts or special tax districts. So this company in California is actually doing everything that it can, billing, collections, letters from our mayor, and it's literally controlling the whole structure that's been set up, and that structure is what's called a special district. And again, this is happening all over. So think of school districts, think of water districts, think of sewer districts, think of lighting and special funding districts, think of any kind of district you can really think of. You know, I've heard them now say that in order to fund the streetlights outside of your home on the streets, that they're going to start they're going to start creating districts. And everybody in that district is going to be charged a fee to pay for those streetlights, to keep them on, right? Nothing's changed. You're still being taxed the same you were, you know, with sales tax and property tax, but now they're creating these districts everywhere. And so I spent hours and hours on the phone trying to figure out how the heck this thing worked, and I finally got it to a point where I thought I had understood it. I thought I understood it. I thought it was literally a private corporation that had come in and taken over our police force, our sheriff. And so, what has happened? I mean, this is crazy. To tell you how crazy it is, I just went to they're having meetings now, because we've been exposing this, and this is why I'm a little fearful for myself and for the people involved. We just went to a public hearing for this very thing that we're talking about. And they actually turned that public hearing into a forum where people didn't actually get up to talk. In other words, you couldn't express your opinion in a forum. You could only go and you could stand around the room and talk. And they did this in a library, and it was about 100 people that showed up, and everybody was very angry. But see, nobody had a soapbox to to say anything. And they did this very purposefully so that there's no public record of disagreement. And
so this is the old, we're seeing a lot of this type of tactic in many other meetings, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's right. It's brilliant, whoever thought of this. I mean, these guys are very clever because they've just made it, they can really say that nobody disagreed or protested the fee because there's no record of a protest. There's no public public soapbox that people can actually express themselves. So what I did, I was so angry at this because I've now interviewed the mayor and the sheriff. I went to the library director and I said, "Can I rent the next conference room over?" And I went in there and I invited everybody in that room to come over and listen to me talk about what the heck's going on. So I got about 25 people to come from the ridiculously ineffectual public hearing and public meeting about the police fee. And they all came over and they listened to me talk for about 40 minutes. And I actually got that on film. And I'm kind of excited about that because it was, I prepared a written statement that I could read during the hearing. And of course, I didn't get a chance. So, in the process, people were all these lights were, you could see the light bulbs going on over people's heads, and they were telling me how the sheriff ignores them when they call or they don't show up, and so it was a really good night, and I could just I could see the steam coming out of the sheriff's ears. He was so angry.
Now, was this before or after the radio interview that you did, or is this a different sheriff?
This was tonight.
Okay.
So we're turning this into we're trying to turn this into a national campaign to inform people about what these special districts are, to inform people that we no longer have a lawful sheriff, that the sheriff's department was actually dissolved by the council and dissolved again as a corporate
term.
Okay,
now, I did get a chance to listen to the interview that you did on the radio program, and he definitely disputes your version, right?
Right. And it was wonderful. It was really tough to sit through that kind of abuse from this man, because basically what he was doing, in my opinion, was he was trying to clean up after the mayor, who just completely admitted to all the CAFR wealth, the $650 million that could have been used to pay for this fee, but wasn't. It was all at the county's discretion. And he admitted to all of that. And so the sheriff, being a highly trained liberal arts, a debater and very, very intuitive, smart gentleman, came in to discredit me. And what I found was that he was telling me the truth in his own way.
Well, I think I've heard the same explanation that I heard him tell you in government officials that I've been exposed to. And I think that they as they understand it and explain to them, they accept that explanation.
Well, and I backed him into a corner at one point where he could not answer the question. In fact, he said, I don't know. I can't answer that. And basically what happened is I had Walter Burian call in and ask him a question, and we got to the bottom of it, but I think the sheriff slipped up because, I kept saying this is a private corporation. You started a non-governmental, even though it's created by the government, it's a district. So all of the power of the sheriff's office department was given over to this district, including all of the equipment, all of the assets, monies, everything was transferred from the power of the sheriff, who's the lawful protector of the people, over into this, what's called a unified police department. And all of his deputies have already told us, so we knew this was true, that they lost their deputyship and became police officers. In fact, there was one there tonight, and he was a police officer. He was no longer a deputy. So we know that this is true. And what he slipped up, because I knew that the financing district was a district. What I didn't know was that the UPD, the Unified Police Department, of which he dissolved the sheriff's department and created this, I didn't know that it was a district as well.
Okay, now, one of the things, are you sure that he's well aware of what the whole situation that's going on? Because this, like you said, this is a national thing. And in fact, I almost wonder if it's an international thing of sorts.
It is. Actually, I was on an Irish show and a New Zealand show, and the same thing is pretty much happening everywhere.
Because
I'm starting to wonder if it's not a United Nations.
I'm positive it is, because all the structures that are involved in it, and who the players and what's taking place.
Yes.
Now, are you familiar with Vicki Davis?
Actually, yes, that's our next interview. Vicki Davis is going to be my guest on the local station here Friday from 7 to 9. It's k-talk.com if anyone wants to listen, but I'll be posting that as well. And we're going to be talking about exactly this this structure that I now finally understand. And, you know, it took taking the abuse of that sheriff, who, by the way, everybody tonight is deathly afraid of this man. He is not a good man. His family is also, you know, his father was a federal judge. Yes, he knows exactly what's going on. He's known to be a fairly high in the Masonic order. And, you know, if you know anything about the Mormon Church, it's based on Masonry, and they freely and happily admit that. So there's a huge Masonic influence in this whole governmental structure that's happening.
Well,
that's getting off into tangents, but yeah, this
right,
guy
just exposing this thing, even if this person is you know, well intentioned or not, and is the fact that these kind of structures are taking place that is undermining the highest elected official in our counties.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the easiest way to describe what is happening, like I said, all you have to do is think of your sewer, your district, your water district, you know, any type of district, any fee that you're paying on your property taxes, that's what this is. And so if you picture a pie or a pie chart or you know, with 100 pieces in it, and each of those 100 pieces is actually a function of government, right? Like the police. Like, we also have a unified fire department in which we have to pay a fee for fire protection, essentially. And
even though they're already taxing you in a way for them already, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to read you a story that's really going to hit this home as well. Basically, each little piece of that pie is being singled out, and these districts are being created in order to fill the need, fill the financing, and fill the actual function of that government, of that specific piece of government. And so slowly that pie is being filled with districts that cover the entire pie. And this is a third layer of government. You know, there's the lawful sheriff, there's the legal police, which are municipal corporate police, and now we have something completely different. And when you consider these districts, if we think of the difference between these kind of districts and the districts or areas that we're used to, you know, we think of a district as something on a map where, like puzzle pieces, they fit together in geographical locations, like our school districts, for instance, or our counties or our cities. But these are what you might call three or four dimensional districts, because they can interlock and still have nothing to do with each other. If you picture one of those old Russian babushka dolls, and where you open one doll and the next doll is just a little smaller, and you open that one and the next doll is just a little smaller, you can have 1,000 districts all interchanging and within each other, and they can be completely separate from each other, have nothing to do with each other. And if you're in that district, you're going to have to pay the fee. So,
well, paying the fee wouldn't be so bad if you weren't already paying the fee initially. Now, what's happening is that this goes back a little bit into your interview with your mayor, right? These funds are you're wondering where the monies are going, and they're actually there building into this large pot of money.
Exactly.
And
able to be used at the discretion of the county council, who's the one that created the districts, because they didn't have enough money. It's ironic.
Okay, so and how does anybody get to listen to some of these interviews that you're doing?
If you type in the phrase, that was the name of the article, the sheriff who sold his county, you should be able to pull up my blog. My blog is Reality Blogger. Blogger has one G. So realityblogger.wordpress.com. And the last three posts are the interview with the sheriff, the interview with the mayor, and then the original article, which is entitled The Sheriff Who Sold His County. Now, that article has gone what you might call viral. It had about 30,000 hits, I think, on my blog. It was posted on Rent. It was posted on all these nice big sites. People have reposted it. And, of course, it's free. I don't get anything from it. I want people to keep reposting it, of course, to share it, just like the movie. So those interviews are posted there as well. And I think I actually put the interviews in that article. So I believe you can just listen to them there as well.
Well, and one of the things that about these pots of money that they're always out there looking for ways to that we have to fund them and outside of the taxation or outside of what would appear that they should have operating funds. Do you want to explain that a little bit? Or
yeah, that's the tricky part about this, because basically what's happening is that they're creating these districts. I use this as an example, two examples that I can tell you. One is real and one is kind of fake. But what happened to me, I'm renting a house, and we got a nasty phone call from the landlord who said that he had a lien against his property tax and that we weren't paying our sewer bill. So I look it up, and I find that we have a Salt Lake Valley South Valley Sewer District, which covers a certain area. So what a district is, okay, so keep in mind that all of this infrastructure is paid for by taxpayer dollars. So before my home was even built that I'm living in, there was a sewer system already put into place, because you generally build the sewers before you build the home. That's city planning. What they did was they said, well, you're using the sewers, and therefore we're going to set up a sewer district and charge you a fee. Okay, and that's their concept of governance now. It's something that you don't have a choice. If you want to use the sewers, you have to pay the fee. Well, how can you not use the sewers? It's like a catch-22. It's entrapment. And when I went to pay the fee, not knowing even what it was, because I'm used to my sewer and my water being attached to the same thing, I found out this was one of the special districts, and that's what kind of led me to understanding what these special districts are, special tax financing districts. And I asked point blank, I said, what if I don't want to use your sewers, or what if I, you know, and she literally told me that I don't have a choice. I have to pay this fee. Now, if you think about this and how this works, is, you know, taxpayers must approve any tax increases, whether it be through property taxes, through sales taxes, or any other type of tax, when it comes to funding these types of structures, municipal structures. What happened is that they, in the 1970s, they figured out a way to create these districts, and they've been doing it ever since, that bypass that law, that lawful way of raising taxes. And so they charge what they call a fee, okay? And in our police district, it's called a police protection fee, which is very gangland, if you ask me. And the sewer, it's a sewer fee, okay? So I have to pay $20 a month to have these sewers that my hose water goes into. And so what they've done then is created a tax that's not a tax when it first comes out. Of course, everything's a tax, but it's called a fee. Now, the trick of how all of these districts work is that if you do not pay your fee gets attached to your property tax. Now, what happens if you don't pay your property tax? I think we all know what happens if you don't pay your property tax. Your house gets taken in lieu of that fee. And when they assess that fee into a collections agency, which eventually goes to the county treasurer, which is what happened to me, the county put a senior lien on this home, meaning that meaning that if I have a mortgage on the home, it goes above the mortgage, and if I am free and clear, I own my home, or at least I think I do, it goes above my name. So the county actually has a senior lien on my home, and after a year or two, if I don't pay my home, they put my home up for sale. And that's the reality of what a district is.
So that takes precedence over any kind of mechanics lien or anything else that could be
everything.
Sitting.
It's government. I mean, how are you going to argue with government? They're the ones that are doing it in the first place and allowing those mechanic liens to go on in the first place. Of course, they're going to take the senior position.
So, okay, going back then to the sheriff situation. I mean, this is happening all over. And so I'd been hearing this prior to, you know, hearing your interview, was that they were going to try to dissolve the sheriffs. Now, if you literally, I mean, from what I gleaned a little bit from what your interview was saying is that in a sense, they gave a new hat to the sheriff, but it looked to me like it was almost a revenue source more so than it is a policing source.
Yeah, well, see, and that's the trick, you know, and all of this is very clandestine and very tricky. It's whoever came up with this, I have to give them credit because they've, you know, the fact that I was able to figure it out, and like I said, it took that sheriff literally trying to discredit me and yell at me and get me off balance in order to figure this out. And talking to Vicky actually really helped me figure this out. Because, you know, I was wrong on some accounts, but I wasn't really wrong, I just was using the wrong words. Because long before we had this unified police department, meaning all police have been unified into one corporation, at least the cities that are cooperating with it. But long before that, we had something called multi-jurisdictional unification. I just got an email from an old friend in Los Angeles who says, yeah, actually our Los Angeles police have jurisdiction in the whole state now, so they're a victim of this, but they can also go out of state into Arizona and now have jurisdiction. They are multi-jurisdictional. And so our state in the 90s actually created a multi-jurisdictional task force, taking away jurisdiction.
I mean, I may be reaching in this statement, but it almost sounds like the corporate revenue army.
No, you're not reaching. It's so much worse than I can possibly put into words, you know. Because let's take our, you know, the perfect example of this are these two things that were created, these two districts that were created. And again, I didn't know that the Unified Police Department was a district. I couldn't have fathomed that. And only because the sheriff slipped at the end of the interview and had to answer with that as a question, do I now understand what's going on. So they created this unified police district, and they moved all the assets of the county over into the district. Now you'd ask, why wouldn't they just give more power to the lawful sheriff's office? But instead they completely took all the assets of the sheriff's office and moved it into this private corporate district. And I say private loosely, but
I mean, because he really tried to refute that particular point.
Yeah,
right?
And here's why, and here's why I was confused, and I'm glad to admit to being wrong. I just want someone to tell me why I'm wrong.
But you're asking questions, and that's something
And the only reason that he was able to do what he was doing is he was telling me I was wrong, but never actually telling me the truth. And so only by him saying that it was a district did I understand. So, okay, they created the UPD, and then and they basically, the Unified Police Department and the a couple council members and the county mayor are the board of directors of that, and the sheriff was appointed as CEO, chief executive officer of that district. So he is both the lawful sheriff, the elected sheriff, without a department anymore, and he is also the CEO of this corporate structure that is required to essentially, you know, collect fees and taxes and tickets and citations to fund itself. So if you have a problem with your police, you know, technically the thing to do is call the lawful arm of the county, which is the sheriff.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? It reminds me of when you have a corporate takeover or, you know, merger, whatever you want to call it, and they want to keep, they tell all the personnel who was the prior personnel of the corporation that had been taken over that they're going to keep their jobs and nothing's going to change.
Well, and you know, you can
liken that. And then down the road, they just take out their ability to have any influence, and before you know it, then they get their pink slip. Or
yeah, well, the best way to look at that is what's happening with it's been happening with private corporations, but it's going to start happening with government as well. And you look at the pension fund system. If you look at the pension fund system with private companies, you know, basically what they would do is they'd go in and they'd buy a company and, you know, put these earmarks in the contract that says we are going to completely liquidate the pension system. So everybody, we're not only going to fire the employees, we're going to take all the money that they contributed into the pension fund system because it's not their money. They voluntarily contributed their money into the pension system for that company. And so it's not their money. It's a voluntary thing. And so they'll come in and they'll reorganize the company and steal the pension system. And it's billions of dollars.
See, that isn't that where the ERISA came from?
The what?
ERISA laws that came out of the 60s or somewhere in there.
Yeah, but, you know, most of those kind of laws, including the Glass-Steagall, for instance, have been just wasted away.
Right.
But, you know, when government is the major shareholder of these corporations, of course, it's going to get rid of the laws that prevent it from doing its criminal activity.
Yeah, because, I mean, there used to be a point in time when they had these pension funds that they had to keep a certain amount in reserve. But I get the impression from how I'm hearing the government officials thinking that they have to keep it in reserve, but in a sense, there's something else going on there that, I mean, I've never seen a pot of money that somebody didn't try to take somewhere along the line.
Well, I mean, to give you an example of what's going on, General Electric is a good example, because General Electric made about a $9 billion profit for 2010. But General Electric, being a almost wholly owned corporate structure of the government, paid no federal taxes in 2010. No federal taxes. And that is because a lot of their businesses overseas, they, you know, use all kinds of reasons. But this wholly, almost wholly owned corporation of the government did not pay any federal taxes. That's a huge, they actually got a $3 point something million tax credit from the government. And why? Because, of course, if you charge the company like General Electric $3 point something billion in taxes, it would hurt the bottom line. Your stocks wouldn't be worth as much. You wouldn't make the dividends that you would make if you charged, you know, if you didn't charge them a tax. It's that simple. It's really that simple. Think of it this way. You know, when I look at my police now, I'm seeing them driving, you know, they used to drive these Ford Crown Victorias. So the police, you know, generally had a contract with Ford to drive those kind of cars. Now what are they driving? Chargers, what's the new car? Those souped up General Motors cars. Well, General Motors got usurped by the government. It's now a government corporation. So naturally, all these cars are being, you know, written off by General Motors and going to these police agencies. You know, it's business. That's all government is. It's business.
Okay, another aspect that I've found interesting, and I don't, you know, maybe you can find the tie-in here, whatever, but it's to the point that, you know, bankruptcy is a way of doing business. And so when you've got certain things like you're too big to fail type thing, or you've got a firm that, particularly I found it in communications, travel, and utilities, was if, you know, they start to go under, then they can get the taxpayer money, and then they can double dip that way, right?
Yeah. And like I said, you know, this, it basically answers any question like that you have. If you just always, before you ask the question, think, do I need to ask the question? Do I need to? Because I know that government owns the company. So they have the major shareholder proxy vote. They have the major, you know, ownership shares in the company. Do I need to ask the question? Because of course they're double dipping. Of course they're too big to fail, because they're government.
Okay, so now
there's very little distinction.
Okay, so when you get bring in the public, and this is just my opinion, but I think I've got a handle on it. Okay, now you bring in your public-private partnership aspect. Now they're taking the profit and leaving the rest for the public to pay for, and so they're separating out that part. So you don't really, they don't even have to show that on the books, right?
Exactly. And that brings us back to the unified police district, because, you see, the sheriff is now CEO of this district, chief executive officer with the board as the mayors and the city council. So what do? They create, within the unincorporated area of Salt Lake County, there's 1 million people in the county, and about 250,000 people are within the unincorporated area, meaning they don't have a corporate municipality. They're a city, but not incorporated. And so what they do is they create what's called the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area. Again, another district, okay? Only this time it's a public-private partnership, okay? And the UPD might be as well. I haven't uncovered that yet, but it's very possible. But see, the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area, you know, from its website, it actually says the only purpose of this service area, this district, is to fund the Unified Police District, okay? But it is a completely separate county government entity that is not attached in any way to the Unified Police Department. So what's happened is that the mayor, and especially the sheriff, who is the CEO of the UPD, the Unified Police Department, is coming out and saying, I have never raised taxes, and I can promise you that in the next 100 years, I will never raise property taxes. And why is he able to say that? Because he is not attached in any, you know, relative way to the fundraising district that they created just for his department. So he can actually say that he didn't raise taxes, while at the same time, you know, that's his right hand, while his left hand is over here creating these fees that people have to pay, $174 fee that every homeowner and business owner have to pay, and that money then gets transferred over to the UPD, and he can actually claim that he never raised taxes.
Now, in your area now, is your police, fire, the ones that are the ones implementing collection of these building department fines or fees? I mean, in speaking, say, like if you didn't paint your building or whatever, and you get, are you familiar with this?
Oh yeah. I've got people tonight actually that came up to me and said, you know, if I have a spot on my lawn, just a urine spot, and a police officer comes along, a code enforcement officer comes along, he can fine me $500 to $1,000 and tell me I need to fix that spot. And if I don't fix it, he can fine me again, even more money.
Yeah, and it's, in some places it's per day or per infraction as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And these are all districts. And that's it's really hard to comprehend that your police department is a district, but that's basically what's happened. Okay, so here's the public-private partnership, okay? So the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, again, all it does is collect money. It doesn't have, it's not police. It has nothing to do with police at all. It's only a funding operation. In fact, let me read from the website. It says, on the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, it says, its sole purpose is to provide funding for police services in the unincorporated areas of Salt Lake County. The SLVLESA does not provide police service. Instead, it forwards revenues to the Unified Police Department, which provides law enforcement services to the unincorporated county. The UPD is responsible for all police operations. And then it says under leadership, that the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area was created by unanimous vote of the Salt Lake County Council, not the voting public. Okay? The council approved itself and Mayor Peter Caroon to serve as the service area trustees. Again, trustee, a very corporate term. Councilman Brady serves as the chair. So he's the chair of the board of directors of this.
Okay, what I'm curious about, okay, on these districts, is there an oversight over these districts? Does it come into some kind of a regional or federal jurisdiction?
That's my next frontier, is trying to figure out exactly how these things are working.
Because they sound like a controlling mechanism in somewhat like the federal government is to the states and the cities and the counties and whatever. And then if you want some money, you got to do this for us. And in order to do that, you got to, jump through this hoop.
Right, right. Now, my opinion is that, yes, this is the absolute federalization of state governments, because once you become a corporation, you're essentially bound by federal, rules and regulations. And yes, when I read some of the documents, and I don't have them up in front of me right now, but it talks about certain federal grants and loans and stuff like that. So I'm pretty sure that this represents the federalization of government. And that's something that I'm going to tackle, as I learn, and definitely get into when I am sure about it, But what's happening here with the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area and why it's a public-private partnership is because the district itself only is these three people, Jim Bradley, Michael Jensen, who are council members, and Peter Caroon, who's the county mayor. That is all it is. Now, do you think these guys are doing anything in this area? They're not doing anything. What's happening is they're outsourcing every single aspect of this district, all of the billing, the collections, the letters that are written, everything. They set up credit cards. You can pay with credit cards. They do the late fees. Everything is done by a private non-government corporation in California.
Right.
And the company is called NBS. Now, these are companies that are specifically set up to help cities and counties and states create special financing districts. So the company, NBS, and their website is nbsgov.com, which means that it's not a government corporation. They come in and they canvass the area. So they came in and they pretty much, looked around. They saw they looked at the medium income of the people, and they looked around and they said, we think that if you charge these people about $174 a year, that they will pay it and still, it won't hurt them too bad, and they won't complain, and they'll be okay, I think. That's what we think, and that's our advice to you. They're like a consulting firm, and then also the collections and all the mailing. So everything in this district, all this trouble is all done by this private corporation in California. And all that money, the whole purpose of it is simply to go to the new district called the Unified Police District.
Well, I see, what I see taking place here, and again, this is just my opinion, but I've watched it in the corporate arena, that now they've just moved over into the government arena, but they're switching it over into the corporate structure. And so ultimately they're consolidating. And then what they're going to do is that outsourcing that you're talking about will go international. It won't, and we will lose local control if we don't take back our governments and take out and not let this process take place. But
yeah,
you know,
and
it's
and
tough to fight it when you're in a hostile takeover, because that's what has happened, right?
Yeah, and like I said, if we don't do anything about this and quick, it's a world engulfing event right now. And you're right. You're losing, because we were tackling this conversation tonight. We were like, well, what can we do? The courts are already, we know that they are private corporations who oftentimes the judge owns the corporation. They rent their services and the building to the county or the state, and we know that they write dummy checks. And the IRS is fully aware of this, so we can't go to the IRS. We can't go to the courts because they're not acting lawfully. They're actually private corporations. We can't solve this through any real lawful means. We don't have a sheriff, so we can't count on him. He's still the elected sheriff, but he's in a complete conflict of interest, being the CEO of a corporation, of a district that completely abuses people in this county. What can we do? If we have no lawful outlet anymore, if we have no recourse against this, in other words, we didn't vote it in as the people. The mayor and the council did, but not the voting public. If the voting public never voted something in, how can they vote it out?
Well, you know, the only thing that I can see is something that is like taking place in Iceland and in Spain and these other places where the people are finally starting to get it. And even though this is somewhat of an indirect, but a direct means, is to going back to these bankers that, you know, that aren't being held accountable for the improprieties that has taken place, and start there. But, you know, they're all in on this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the problem. It's a complete symbiotic relationship between the media, who, by the way, another you know, group of corporations that I prove without a doubt is owned by a government. You cannot. The only thing that I can think of, to be perfectly honest with you, is a boycott. Is where everybody just takes off their license plates to their cars. Everybody stops shopping at Home Depot and Walmart, and stops shopping at stores like Smith's. Starts going to local farmers. The only thing I can think of that will actually stop this is to quit participating. That's the only, you know. But it has to be a massive effort, because, you know, I can see them, you know, taking a certain amount of people's homes, but or cars for that matter, for driving without a license plate. But at what point does it get unreasonable that they, you know, you can't arrest everyone for not driving without a license plate. You can't arrest everyone for not consenting with these fees and these things, you know, for defending their home.
Well, I mean, and this is what that movie Inside Job gets into, a little bit of what, you know, the people, I mean, a little bit on what was going on in Iceland, but although the people did, you know, rise up and start trying to hold them accountable, and then right now you're seeing the things in Spain and a lot of these other countries. I think it seems like Egypt and maybe some of these other countries that are being purported as being political problems are more so that the people are being starved and are rising up and speaking out.
Yeah, and I got to be honest with you, I'm pretty darn disappointed with Americans, because we really don't do anything. I'm empathetic at the same time, because we've been trained, well, let's organize a campaign and send millions of emails. Well, gosh, you know, think about it. How you have a spam folder. All you have to do is say that the general public is spam, and then say, well, we received your email, send a nice little form letter out that says we received your email, and we're taking your opinion into consideration. And that goes into a permanent file, and just like the sheriff who says, I didn't raise your taxes, government can say, hey, I received your email, we have a record of it, and we responded to you.
Well, you know, one of the things that, I people don't give themselves credit, but I'll tell you, when you start asking questions, you don't even have to be right. Just start asking questions. You'd be amazed at how many other people have just not spoken up and have been wondering about things themselves. And when they start getting these questions and people just start saying, I don't, you know, and speaking out and saying, no, I don't really want to pay this, or I'm paying this in protest, or I'm, you know, why are we doing this? You'd be amazed at how things start to change. And if they don't change, they at least know how you feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. Are you familiar with the allegory of the cave, you know, Plato and the allegory of the cave?
No, I'm not.
Well, you know, I'm going to be horrible in butcher the story, but, you know, basically there's these slaves, and they've been sitting in a cave their whole life. And their whole life, their whole childhood and their whole grown life, they've been watching these, you know, the opening of the cave is behind them, and they're not allowed to look back. And the whole time, the light has been shining in, and they see all these shadows on the wall of people and children and dogs and animals all going by them as they're doing their work and they're making their cogs. And they see that, and that is their reality. They see the shadows, but they don't know what's causing the shadow. They couldn't even imagine that those are people and dogs and children and other things besides just shadows. And one day when one of the slaves actually gets free, he walks outside of the cave and he sees a whole world that he didn't even know existed. And when he tries to go back in and tell his fellow slaves about what's going on outside there, what's causing these shadows that is their reality, the slaves get real nervous and say, you crazy? I'm not going to get out of my chains and go look. I'm not going to do that. And so despite whatever the slave says to the other slaves, the one that's now free, he can't get them to look. And so they continue to live in this sort of comfort zone, even though it's not very comfortable, and they live their lives out in their own reality, in this reality that you know, all this stuff's going on around, but you can't see it. You can't see it for what it is. And it's a great, you know, metaphor, kind of a, like I said, allegory for how we have been trained since birth, not only in public school, but through the media, through all the movies that we watch, and even that inside job, you know, it trains you to put your anger and your energy to the wrong people, which are these corporate structures, when you should be looking at government, who's the one that's allowing it to happen.
You know, when I first went into insurance and I started looking at contracts, you cannot believe how much opposition and or shuffling me aside when I started tearing apart some of the things in the contracts and asking questions about them and trying to talk to an actuarial and try to figure out, why are you charging what you're charging for this, and why do you think that this is such a bad risk and things of this sort. And you know, nobody wants to answer any of these questions, and they should have been legitimate questions.
Yeah.
And that information should have been out there, but they did everything they could to discourage me on trying to figure out, you know, they have to disclose, but it's all written in mumbo jumbo, and so it didn't take me too long to start figuring out that, you know, there's something more going on here. I won't get into that, but it's when we start asking those questions, I've learned that you just never know where that'll lead.
Yeah, well, and that's what happened to me when I first looked at these CAFRs, these Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports. There's so much extraneous information that doesn't need to be there, and they report things in the reports three different ways, so they can make it look like it's a negative balance, even though it's a positive balance. So it's really confusing to actually go through these things and figure out what's real and what's not. But once you do, I mean, the whole world is opened up to you, and the clarity of thought that comes with an understanding of these CAFR reports,
right.
I mean, it makes life so much more, I won't say enjoyable, because it's a it's a harsh reality. But
you know how to read them, and you know how to go cut through,
yeah,
cut to the chase.
Yeah, it's an enlightening feeling.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And you don't have to wonder anymore.
And that government shouldn't be a mystery, and it shouldn't be, you know, when they give you an answer that you don't understand, go out and find out why you don't understand it, or make sure that it's explained in such a way that you can.
One of my, I guess you'd call them platforms for this whole presidential thing is the concept that whistleblowers should, like you were trying to tell me you were, that no one was listening to you, should be celebrated. And that people who are in government now shouldn't necessarily get in trouble because, you know, you can't get ahead in government unless you're unethical at this point. You know, you cannot blow the whistle without, again, being set up in some way, whether it's death or a prostitute, you know. Some sort of discrediting, public discrediting. And so what I'm saying is, hey, if you've got information, come forward. Even if you're part of that crime, I understand that you're forced to be part of that crime because these people have something over you. They will kill your family. I mean, I have no doubt about that. And so,
but
you know, it's like an open invitation for whistleblowers to come forward and say, okay, this is what's wrong in my department. Here's the key players that have caused it. And here's how we can fix it. You know, this whistleblower thing needs to be a celebrated pastime, essentially, because, you know, how else do you find out that something in government is corrupt but people like you, people like me, people like people unwilling idiots like Mayor Caroon who come out and say, yeah, the county has all this wealth that we're not using.
Well,
you know, these people aren't necessarily bad people. They're just caught in an unethical situation. They have a family to feed, and the government has created a situation where, you know, we're approaching about 50% of the population is now working government jobs, something crazy like that.
And it doesn't have to be unethical. I mean, you know, if we're asking questions and we're standing up and just saying, oh, I don't have time to pay attention to this. Well, somebody's going to pay attention to us, and generally people with an agenda pay attention to it. So
yeah.
So if you don't pay attention to it and stand up for your own rights, that somebody's going to take them, and that's exactly what's happening on every single level out there.
And I agree with you, and the things that I'm uncovering with this, and I'm not the first to uncover this. I'm just the first to go, you know, take a step back and go, wow, you know, I'm Copernicus yelling from the from the top there saying, wow, if you people don't pay attention to this, you are going to lose everything, and quick. This isn't just, you know, it's like globalization. I say, you know, people are constantly saying, well, we should be afraid of globalism, and it's coming, and we're you know, it's going to hurt us, and it's going, but it's already happened.
Well, you know, one of the things that came out in that Inside Job, they kept, you know, talking about Hank Paulson, and I'm one of the few people that I know of that keeps pointing out Hank Paulson has just started. He hasn't even come close to what the ultimate thing that's going to take place, and that money that's been shifted out in a way is going to come back to haunt us, because he's on the board of governors of the Nature Conservancy, and I can see something coming down the road here that a lot of people aren't even paying attention to. And you see what I'm talking about?
No, I mean, keep talking.
Because I truly believe that with that, you know, and of course this is my speculation, but there's a lot of things going on now that I was saying was going to happen a long time ago, but ultimately all these wilderness areas and resources that are starting to be tallied, that have been tallied up, and these roadless areas and all these places that we think that we're setting aside for the environment, these guys are going to come back in, and they're going to take over those resources, and they're going to ignore all this environment, and they're going to ignore the land trust, and they're going to ignore all these other situations that are being put into place under heritage areas, and you name it, because the UN is behind the heritage areas, and this Nature Conservancy is one of the largest owners in the world, other than, as far as I know, the Queen. And so I'm saying that these guys are going to come back in here and take that money that they were too big to fail and buy these resources back and out of our control, because they're pretending we're in bankruptcy, even though, I mean, and it's not pretend, but they've shifted it to make it appear that we're in bankruptcy, and what you're saying is the opposite, and most people haven't.
Oh, yeah, there is no bankruptcy going on.
Right. I mean,
no, there is no government. I have not found one CAFR that shows any government for 2010 that didn't make a humongous gain or profit, whatever you want to call it, by billions, millions or billions of dollars, including pension funds. Like, let's take the New York pension system that we're referring to. They made $24 billion in profit. General Electric only made 13. General Electric is a weapons manufacturer. They make light bulbs. They make so many things. They only made $13 billion in profit, while a pension fund made $24 billion. Okay? You want to worry about what's going to get taken. You take those billions that are in those pension funds are going to be used for what you're talking about.
They
and let's talk logically about what you're saying. All they really have to do, as we've just discussed, is turn a national park or a state park or a county, you know, land into a district.
And follow that line of...
Well, I mean, you're talking about the easiest way to take over the resources without making it a national event and drawing attention to themselves is to change a national park into a national district. It has now become a, like I said, a third level of government. So the all the power and all the authority and all of the policing and all of the fees and everything has just been transferred away from whoever's protecting it, you know, the Department of the Interior, and has been transferred into now a district similar to what we've got now, where all the sheriff's powers got transferred. That would be the easiest way to take over. Take over is not the right word, but to
incorporated into an aspect that there is no local control.
Exactly, exactly.
Right, right. No, and I see, I mean, when you have satellite systems set up to where they can, you know, view your home from satellite and see whether you've met the codes for, you know, how your yard meets, you know, the building codes and whatever. I mean, there's no end to what can happen. All I'm just saying is start asking questions. I don't have to be right. I'm just saying, you know, I see something coming down the road here. When these guys that were ahead of these banks that have failed, we've given them bonuses. We didn't make them accountable. So obviously to somebody, they're doing the right thing.
Right, and that's what's important. Is they're getting bonuses not because they did something wrong, but because they did something right. Right? Let's take the head of like Bear Stearns or somebody. Take the head of Merrill Lynch. He did something very, very right. As the CEO, he obeyed what the board of directors told him to do, which is to essentially bankrupt the company and be usurped into Bank of America. Well, of course he's going to get a bonus. He cooperated with government. But then let's take someone else, I don't know, who has not cooperated with government, like the guy from Overstock.com, fascinating gentleman, who has gone against and took government to court for trying to take over his company. Who knows how long he's going to last out there? I can't remember his name right now. But these guys got bonuses. You know, everybody says, why aren't they being held accountable? They are being held accountable. They've done exactly what government wanted them to do. Of course they're going to get bonuses. It's just that we're not in the realm of thought or comprehension that we can understand that they got a bonus for a reason.
Right, right. And
nothing changed. The government still owns the corporations. They've just been merged into smaller, monopolistic, you know, forms that are easier to control. It's that simple.
Right. And even though I did not get into all the particulars of why I believe what I believe, although there's definite reasons behind it, but I'm not, that's where I bring in people like you to try to relate some of this stuff, but and I hope to get into this further on some of these Nature Conservancy and some of the tie-ins with some of these other entities that have been involved in the banking system and that and the like. But I want to thank you, Clint, for coming on the program. And did we get everything discussed that we're hoping to kind of cover on this, or did we miss something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just understand that every single aspect of government is being repurposed and redistricted to these districts, and it's happening in your city. I guarantee that it is happening in your area, whether you're incorporated or not. You always will live in a corporation, whether it's the county or the state.
Okay.
So, and like, we must be vigilant.
Okay,
basically.
So what you have run across the Council of Governments and where that's going.
I keep hearing about different types. There's an international Council of Mayors, which is mayors from all countries. Mm-hmm. We're having the Governors Association meet in Utah this year, which is all governors are going to be here. I mean,
so is there governors all around the world?
Yeah.
Okay, so
we've got the same structure all over the world at this point.
Okay,
I mean,
so
if you think about it, everything's really
being globalized.
Like a commonwealth of England, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
We're all set up the same way.
Ah, so ultimately they just use a lot of the same terminology so that you don't notice that it's being incorporated into something that you would have noticed if they'd given it a different style of name or...
Yeah, and, you know, we're getting confused, actually. Walter is getting confused because he was trying to pull up Massachusetts, the CAFRs for each county, and he couldn't find them. And then he looked for the state, and he couldn't find them. And the guy that he talked to, the council person, said, well, we don't have a state CAFR anymore. And Walter couldn't figure it out. And finally he thought, well, I wonder if they're a commonwealth. And so he put commonwealth in. And Massachusetts is no longer a state. It's a commonwealth. And so I don't even think that they have counties. I think they collaborated all the county wealth into the state government. So
that's where a lot of that's where those funds are going to go then.
Yeah. Well, what else does that mean? That means that all the county sheriffs are gone too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been hearing that one for sure, because they don't want anybody with any power, because they're trying to take away all our power. But that
and
those
a darn
funds
good
will
job.
Disappear. You wait. All those slush funds that were set aside for a rainy day, or those pension funds, will disappear.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I hope that people take this as a very real thing, because it's happening to me and I'm downright scared, and the people that were there at that meeting tonight are very scared of this sheriff. This sheriff is supposed to be their protectorate, and they wish that they had police protection against him.
Well, you know, I mean, it isn't just in that avenue that we have to be paying attention. I mean, there's a lot of things going on around us that should be of concern, that any
yes.
of us don't have any, our rights are being eroded in on all levels. So if we rock the boat in anywhere, it could be, you know, you just have to realize what the consequences are. So, but do we live in fear or what? So.
I refuse to, and I'm perfectly ready for whatever happens, whether it's jail or death. There's nothing that's going to stop me, and I can probably say that a lot easier than a lot of people. I do not have kids, I do not have a wife, and I do not have property, and so there's nothing they can take away from me but my freedom. And so it's probably a lot easier for me to stand up than a lot of people, and I understand that, and that's okay.
Well, I just keep speaking out. I mean, because, you know, the only way people are going to learn about this stuff is that, you know, the ones that are spending the time, because pretty soon we won't have that ability if we, if things keep going as they're going. So, you know, keep up the good work and keep exposing what people just should have known all along. We wouldn't be exposing this stuff if it was people paying attention and understanding what their government was doing. So.
Well, and it's empathy, too. If you can't empathize with the situation, if you can't empathize with the fact that our soldiers are over there killing families, and you just ignore the fact that that's happening, then it's going to continue to happen. It's
right.
That simple. And if you don't start paying attention, it's going to keep happening.
I mean, seem like we've been at war since I was born, and that's been a while. So,
yeah.
and it'll continue if there's profit in it for somebody. And unfortunately, it's obvious that, if we don't speak up and make ourselves be worth something, it doesn't appear that we're just expendable otherwise. So,
yeah.
So again, I want to thank you, Clint, and you keep up the good work. And let's hear victories and not something particularly negative, that you get some support in what you're doing.
Well, just remember to martyr me if anything happens to me, because I am poking the enemy with a very sharp stick. So. Remember me.
And we know what happened to Walter, so.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so it is.
Well, that's the difference. I've gotten myself to where I don't have anything to lose, so. And he did.
Right.
And he did. He lost everything. So, anyway, thank you,
okay.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Take care.